Shayna, my dear.
Christopher.
I thought we could do some team building exercise in this moment when it's just you and me.
Oh, good. You know, I love team building exercises.
So this is a thumbs up or thumbs down question so that you and I can get to know each other a little bit better. But thumbs up or thumbs down to Halloween?
Oh, thumbs up. Thumbs up.
I'm a thumbs down.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
How come?
I'm a thumbs down because I have traumatic memories of being a child and my mother was not good at costumes. And so, you know, you come to school supposed to wear a costume and basically I was the one with the white sheet over my head with holes cut in the sheet. And I would trip over the, you know, sheet's too big, too long. I would trip over. Just not good memories.
Sorry. You know what I love about Halloween is I love the playfulness it brings out in people. And last night there was a wonderful segment on WMUR about the mombies, like zombies. So moms dressed as zombies who are out on like Main Street, I don't know, P-Town or someplace, dancing to Michael Jackson, like in perfect unison. Like they practice this stuff and they're raising money for breast cancer awareness and, you know, people's lawns that like when Halloween just throws up all over the front lawn. It's just, you know, I mean, I'm glad people have the time and the wherewithal to kind of like really go for it. I think it just, it points to one of those things that makes me sort of look at human beings as interesting, worthy of our attention.
Welcome to What in God's Name. She is Shayna Appel.
And he is Chris Owen.
Our mission is to get you, our listening community, to take off the glasses that you use to see into our shared common life, the default glasses of politics and economics, and to put on some different glasses and to see through the lenses of moral philosophy, philosophical thinking, and theological thinking, if you are so inclined.
And why do we do that, Chris?
We do that because the usual glasses distort and don't allow us to see really deeply or clearly into human experience. This is really about peeling away some layers so we get to some core human experiences. That's one reason to do it. The other reason to do it is, I think, just historically for our culture at this time, and maybe it's for all times, but it seems particularly acute to me right now, that the difficulties that we have as a culture, as a society, in our shared common life, they're not illuminated by the kinds of political conversations we have. So I think It's a, you know, we are pushing at a way to try to understand our problems at a deeper level, which then can allow us, I think, to act more wisely.
I think that was really good on the fly, Chris. Bravo.
Hey, that's what we do.
That's what we do. We have, for those of you who have been listeners for some time, you know we have a spinny wheel.
Oh, sorry, I've got a couple of things first.
Oh.
Before the spinny wheel.
I know.
That was good of you to go there, but a couple of program notes. On November 11th, we are interviewing David Gushee. His new book is Defending Democracy from Its Christian Enemies. That conversation is available. You can participate in it if you are a Patreon supporter of What in God's Name. You get special access. So if you have been waiting to become a Patreon supporter, now is the time. If you sign up to support us on Patreon, it's not a lot of money for you, but it means a lot to us. You will receive a special invitation to join David Gushee on What in God's Name on November 11th. The second thing to say, Shayna, is What in God's Name is now the podcast of the S1 Project, and the S1 Project is expressing itself in various ways. Our podcast is one. We're also developing some other programs, educational partnerships and collaborations, which means that our podcast may not be coming out weekly because we need to be good stewards of our resources, and we're putting some energy into some of these collaborations. So if you've been with us for a while, you know that we've been diligent about producing new content weekly. We will be producing content regularly, but it might be for a little while at least, once every other week, or fortnightly, as they say in Britain. I always did like to use the word fortnight and fortnightly.
And Chris, if people are looking for more information, we have a new website.
That is so correct. Yes, you can go to s1project.org. Now we can talk about the spinny wheel.
So for those of you who've been listening for some time, you know we have a spinny wheel we begin our show with. It's a bicycle wheel mounted to a board with a bunch of sort of core topics and ideas that we like to play with here at What in God's Name. We give the wheel a spin at the beginning of our show, and it gives Chris and I a little bit of time to mentally limber up, because these conversations that we're having with you are not scripted. They are not even storyboarded. They are we are trying to demonstrate here what it is we are trying to teach, which is how to do conversation in a way that actually leads us to new understanding, opens up new possibilities, takes us places that may have been there, but which we may not have seen. So I think it's my turn today.
It is your turn. Since Shana cannot read my handwriting, I get to say what the spinny wheel has landed on. The pointer, which is a sprinkler head, has landed on the S1 Project, which is perfect. I was just mentioning the S1 Project. The S stands for plural. In English, in the English language, we make plural nouns by adding the letter S. So S1 is this, it's kind of a shorthand way to play with the concept of the one and the many. Of
getting beyond the binary.
Diversity and unity, like holding the, so much of what we talk about, Shana, is about just exactly that, is about holding seemingly opposite ideas or concepts in tension, in creative tension. And plurality and unity is simply one of many different concepts that we could point to where, again, seeming opposites are held in creative tension. And I would just add this before you get a chance to jump in, which is, man, this is a real part of being human, is that we live in a lot of creative tension. And if we try to just land on one side and forget about the other, we lose a piece of what it means to be human and the problem of being human. I mean, it's just not easy to live a human life.
And we lose the ability to see people who think differently from us as all, we lose the ability to see their humanity.
Yeah.
Describes so much of what's going on in our world right now, Chris.
That is our signal that we are ready to move from the spinny wheel to our topic of the day. The topic of today is, well, what should we name the topic of today, Shana? Is it sin and democracy?
Just to
be provocative.
You know, the impulse for today's show came from a bumper sticker that's on a really good friend of mine's car. It simply says, humankind, and then beneath that, be both. And I thought, it's so simple, but, oh man, there is so much connected to all of that.
Yeah. So at the end of our last conversation, you interjected towards the end by asking if you could make an inflammatory remark.
Yes, I did.
You did. That's exactly. And then I said, of course you can make an inflammatory remark. We love them. And you said things like, human beings are certainly capable of greatness. And we're inclined to miss the mark, to look to look to our own selves and our own interests rather than and overlook the common good. And so this was this, and you also talked about how the world's religions, again, you said it in your inimitable way, the message of the world's religions is not, oh, you're just great, you know, saying to humans, you're wonderful and great just the way you are, you don't need to change. That's not the message. So, and to tie this back to democracy, which we'll do, this is, you know, this is our conversation today.
And the underlying theme of yeah. the year.
Yeah, yeah. What are the moral foundations of democracy? This is, you know, how you regard human nature is an important element in how you would think a functioning politics would work and the kinds of practices that you would need as a society to do politics well, depending on whether you think human beings are basically good or basically self-centered.
And I, you know, my inclination is to say both.
Yeah, well, of course.
But that having been said, I think the older I get, and maybe this has less to do with age and more to do with the world we're living in, I'm seeing, you know, humanity's proclivity towards sinfulness, that is, to be self-interested, to disregard or do at another's expense based on what makes me comfortable, what is easy for me. That tendency seems to be way out in front now, whether it has been throughout all times. Certainly the founding fathers recognized humanity's capacity for sinfulness. Humanity might have in its heart or in its head the desire to do good. Who was it, Aquinas? It's the good I would do, I do not. And the...
Augustine, but
Augustine, yeah. Okay. And the bad that I would, you know, I wish I didn't do, I do consistently. And I mean, my God, just ask anybody who's ever tried to diet, right? You know, and maybe not even for like weight loss, but you had a heart attack or you had cancer or you had some medical, and you know you should make certain decisions about how to go forward from that experience and live well and live healthily. And we see how difficult it is and how often we fall.
Yeah. I've got a...
That's a very, I mean, obviously a very simplified idea of it.
I'm gonna read a little piece to you that I prepared.
You're gonna inflame me?
I'm gonna read a little piece, three paragraphs from an article by James Nuchterlein, because he's talking about, I mean, the 20th century spokesperson, representative of the view of the kind of Augustinian view of the human being, and then that its impact on our shared common life and on politics is Reinhold Niebuhr.
And oh yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
So here's a little from James Nuchterlein about Niebuhr's perspective, and he calls it. We could debate this, but he calls Niebuhr's perspective, and it's, I mean, it's not just Nuchterlein who calls it this. I mean, what Niebuhr's perspective was, is commonly understood as Christian realism. Take that for what it's worth. So,
interpret realism as you will.
Yeah, yes, indeed. Here is the quote. Christian realism rested in brief on certain assumptions. One, that the imperfections of the world stem from fallen human nature. Second, that the realities of self-interest, aggression, and the human will to power have to be reckoned with. Third, that to improve the world, it is necessary to work with those forces and not dream of obliterating them. Next sentence. Though the perversities of fallen humanity can, with considerable effort and ingenuity, be manipulated in the direction of the common good, they cannot entirely be overcome. Thus, the anti-utopian imperative at the heart of Niebuhr's politics. End of quotation. Question to Shana. Do you want to pause on that paragraph or do you want to hear the next two small paragraphs that follow?
Finish up the thought.
Carry on? And then, yeah. Carry on. Okay, so quoting again. This is Nuchterlein. As the meeting place of power and morality, I love this. As the meeting place of power and morality, politics was inescapably for Niebuhr an arena of tension, ambiguity, and uncertainty. The central problem of politics is power. The inevitable temptation of people, most especially when acting collectively, to use whatever advantages are theirs to further their own interests over those of others. Last paragraph. It is not surprising, therefore, that Niebuhr's argument for democracy differed so radically from that of most on the religious left in his day. For them, democracy rested on the possibility of human perfectibility. That's that, you know, this is Chris now commenting. That's that idea that human beings are basically good and can be improved and perfected. Back to Nuchterlein here. Niebuhr, by contrast, famously insisted that while it is humanity's capacity for justice that makes democracy possible, it is humanity's inclination to injustice that makes democracy necessary. And that is the end of what I wanted to offer.
Thus endeth the reading.
So I happen to be Augustinian in this way. Like what I just read is pretty much where I come down. And in that view, Shana, the institutions of a society are necessary as ways of forming a basically fallen human nature and reorienting that towards a vision of the good. So that's where I am on it.
Well, it's interesting because it comes down, you know, I'm thinking about a show we did a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about really how a democracy requires us all to be political conservatives and political liberals, you know, to hope for the best and be able to prepare for the worst, yeah. To put the nets in there to catch things when they start going south. But why would you even bother to put the nets there if you didn't believe there was a capacity for it to go south?
Yeah.
And furthermore, I think we're seeing so clearly today what this runaway power looks like in the hands of certain individuals who exist in the world as if they can do no wrong. Mm, mm. And if I did it, it is therefore right, regardless of anything else.
Right.
That by virtue of the fact that I'm doing it, it's right. And I think we're seeing very clearly in matters like the environment, for example, environmental justice, that there are some people who just don't give a damn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to do what they're going to do for money, and they will spin any tale to themselves and the general public, anybody who listen, regardless of whether it makes any sense whatsoever, based on scientific knowledge that is readily available to anybody who would just simply open up a book.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's the example of people putting their own interests first and sort of the rest of the world be damned. Or I think of people like the Statlers, who owned, you know, one of the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world, and who got there by selling tons and tons and tons of opioids into the public square. Literally, personally, they are responsible for hundreds of thousands of deaths worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't care.
Right.
They were so under the lure of the money they were making hand over fist that they couldn't stop long enough to see what was actually happening on the ground. And then, of course, by the time it's brought to their attention, now it is a giant lawsuit. You're about to lose everything and you may do jail time and, oh my God, so now we're going into protective mode.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is that, you know, as long as they were making money, then as far as they were concerned, things were going well for them.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's a great example there. We could just point to a million examples of where powerful interests exert their power on their own behalf, in the economic realm, in the political realm. Two things that come to my mind as you were speaking of that. I mean, one is, and we've talked about this, and I think it's a key part of why the S1 project is aiming at education and aiming towards young people and collaborating at that level, which is there's a moral education that somehow, you know, as institutions have crumbled in our culture, like, okay, and families have crumbled, like, where are the forums for forming people into with some kind of moral vision, or at least a moral template from which to wrestle with, and you know, not to indoctrinate, but at least to give people tools to reason morally that has the good of the whole in view. I mean, hopefully it would come from spiritual, you know, religious.
Well, that
right?
That's the hard part, is that, you know, I think, and I say this as someone who has been a leader of, you know, within a church, two churches, for 23 years, I think we've failed in many respects. You know, at some point, maintenance of the building and keeping our donors happy became more important than holding people to account. I think post-modernity was a really weird time in history that gave birth to a lot of relativism.
Yeah, right.
And I think we're struggling with that relativism right now. I mean, when we cannot even agree if there are ultimate truths, there is only your truth, then how, okay, fine. So maybe we have multiple teams and multiple groups, you know, working around multiple truths. And then the question is, how do we get those teams to function together? And I think one of the challenges is, in the absence of participating in spiritual community on any sort of a regular basis, where does that gentle invitation come from to see our own fallenness?
Yeah.
To, you know, not, I, you know, because we're, listen, I know plenty of people who are literally dying of shame. And that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is, you know, for 1 hour a week, once upon a time, people entered the space of worship and allowed themselves to be reconnected to their highest ideals. When you take that kind of time, is to recognize that we are missing the mark over and over and over. I love, there's one prayer, one line in a prayer of confession that gets used often, you know, in which we repent for both things said and things unsaid. Where should we have spoken up where we didn't? Does that make us a bad person? No, it was, maybe the space was physically unsafe. Maybe I was just so scared. Maybe I didn't know what to say at the time, but I felt compelled to stand up and then I didn't. Am I doing everything that I can to live on this earth as a responsible human being? No, of course not. This is just about recognizing that to be our best selves, we have to be in training. We have to be in some kind of training to be our best selves. But it feels to me like that whole idea, that whole is a blind spot in the side view mirror of society in America right now. It is a don't know, don't know. Nobody's talking about it. Nobody's dealing with it. And so we end up in these political debates, right? And this is where the conversation gets stuck. So you and I were talking briefly before the show about this current war in Israel and in Gaza, and how, you know, people have moved to take sides. Like, you have to be what? You have to be either for Israel or for the Palestinian people. I'm like, no, I am for the Jewish people and I am for the Palestinian people. The same sensibility in me that was horrified when 1,400 innocent Jews were murdered by Hamas is now been activated in the other direction, because we're up to what, 7,000 Palestinians? the Israeli government was embarrassed. They got pantsed. They felt like they had to turn around now and overreact to prove to their people this is totally a political thing, that we're in charge, we've got this, blah, blah, blah. The inclination of human beings to act their worst when we act out of fear. And no conversation about to pull back from the edge. What suffers is both human and kind. That's what gets lost. And that's what I think is so getting trounced in the public square right now.
Yeah.
That's how we ended up, I think, on the topic
for
today.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that reminds me of the definition of the political realm being the place where morality and power and the tension between morality and power gets played out. I wanted to go back to...
Is there tension right now? Because...
Yeah, right.
I am really... I know I get anxious thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand, I think, in a whole new light, the angst that young people are feeling about the environment. Mm-hmm. And they're looking at the adults in the world and going, why the hell are you people not doing something about this? Now we're down to the next level, which is we're living in this realm where morality is whatever anybody says it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, every human being this is anarchy.
Right.
And where are the adults in the room to shut it down?
Mm-hmm. If being a self-governing people requires the ability to overcome an ingrained inclination to look after only oneself or one's immediate group, if that needs to be overcome, and also if being a self-governing people requires other habits of being as in our shared common life, like being knowledgeable about what's going on in the world, with that information, engaging in conversation, being engaged in smaller civic associations that then make up our shared common life. If all of those things are really necessary to be a self-governing people over the long haul, is being a self-governing people a pipe dream?
Well, it's interesting because as you started to talk, I started to think of de Tocqueville.
Yes, of course.
And he
had warnings for us.
He did have warnings for us. And as I think back on his realization that, while fascinating, this thing is way too big and it has way too many moving parts. And I'm going to oversimplify this now, but when we talk about, in order to function well, we have to have some common ground, some common agreements, right? A game works because everyone understands what the one goal of the game is, right? There can only be one goal. In order for the game to work, can't have multiple goals. One goal for the game to work, and rules that everybody understands and plays by, right? But I think when you look at the United States of America in its current form, there are places in this country where our values are so different.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure you can square that in a way that's going to really work. If our nation right now was a family in my minister's study, I would absolutely break them up into separate rooms and try to figure out in each group what is their point of commonality, and then figure out between the groups and where are the breakdowns happening. Because I just don't. It's hard for me to imagine, and you and I have talked about this, people have a different take on reality.
Right, right.
It's like, it used to be like, okay, well, but at the end of the day, we can all agree that rocks are hard and water is wet. Well, no, that's your... No, it's not just my thinking. Go check it out for yourself. Right. Rocks are hard. Water is wet. Well, that's just how it occurs to you, but maybe I perceive it different. Okay, pumpkin, we're done with this conversation. Like, there's no room to move that forward, you know? Maybe that the whole thing is just fracturing.
Yeah, and I think from the perspective of our question for today is whether that's just inevitable. I mean, history suggests that there will be a day when the United States doesn't exist.
Well,
because
our scriptures make it very clear.
Yeah.
No man can serve two masters. Mm. How do we serve sort of the blind greed of those who just want to drill, baby, drill, and at the same time save the planet? They're not. I don't know how we get to working it out, except, again, and this is where we started the show, right? We were talking about the S1 project, about getting beneath the surface down to core elements. Because even if I don't agree with your fundamental values, if I understand them, you know, then I can listen and I can respect you.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know where it's heading. Nobody knows where it's all heading, but you and I are here. We have this S1 project, and I am not giving up. Like,
oh, no.
I could just, I'm attracted to impossible. I'm attracted to impossibility. And it seems like the project of persuasion, the continuation of being self-governing people in this amazing multiracial, almost national nation that we live in, it seems like it's, if you think, it seems impossible. Like, I am so on board with the fallenness of human nature, and yet there's just so much goodness. There's so much goodness that exists with people despite their fallenness, and there's so much goodness in our shared common life. It's there, and potential is there, and so the S1 project, here we are. Like, we are aiming to see more deeply and to be able then to act together as a self-governing people.
The S1 project is really for people who are about the journey and who want to stay engaged, you know, along the way.
Yeah.
Or who want to engage more deeply. But I think that is, and hopefully it will make us both more human and more kind.
That's a good place to stop. Be curious, Shana.
Go deep, Chris.
And shine light. Our show today is brought to you by our generous donors on Patreon. You can join our generous donors on Patreon by going to patreon.com.
P-A-T.
Oh, yes, we can spell that.
R-E-O-N.com.
And our new website, s1project.org. You can go there to sign up for our newsletter. And that, Shana, we can also spell as S1PROJECT.org. Great to be with you today, Shana.
Always good to be with you, Chris.